We, after 3 weeks, decided, no, the law is the law. And so Robert went to jail on Monday. I suppose some of you have seen the cartoon in the Metro that came out yesterday.
What is he charged with?
When I saw this, now I was very anxious about Robert going into prison or jail, or I've heard many stories, many of them from people calling me directly from jail. They told me that in jail, that it's about 75% Latino, a very high percentage of black people, and only 10% white. And it's all poor people.
Yeah.
The jails are full of poor people. They're crowded. They're too hot. They're too cold. Televisions are on night and day, blaring, and sometimes in languages you don't understand. There's a lot of anger. There's not enough food. This is crime. This is happening in the Santa Cruz City Jail. This is happening in San Francisco Jail as we speak. They are not feeding the people in jail sufficient food to eat on. I'm sure Sean could graphically tell you. They will sell you a chop ramen for 75 cents. The jails are expensive. This is getting into some of the costs that we were talking about earlier. It costs between $20,000 and $30,000 to keep one prisoner in jail in California for 1 year. I did a little calculating earlier when we were hearing about Timothy Turturro. Sorry about your name there. By his case, that if we used the very fair-minded $25,000 a year figure, and we figured he only had the minimum sentence of 6 years, that's $150,000. Are you $150,000 outraged that he fell asleep with a loaded firearm in his pocket? Is that when you're concerned about crime and that we need to feel safe? Do you feel that $150,000 safer knowing that their beloved family member is going to be sitting in this horrid place, packed in like sardines, treated as though less than human? This is no kind of justice. This is not anything that any of us should stand for. On Wednesday, we went to the courthouse with Judge Stevens' court. And when I say we, I mean the defendants in the City Hall Sleepers protest who are challenging an injunction. An injunction that the Santa Cruz City Council ramrodded or maneuvered or rolled.
This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And this was a speech given at the Revolutionary Coalition Forum last night, hosted by Tim Costner, and we're going to hear some more of that.
We're heading on down to San Francisco to take my good friend here, Robert.
Okay, that's not the tape. We already heard that. That was Mr. Twister. Mr. Twister, myself, Robert, as we headed up Highway 1 last Monday, June 17th, to take Robert in, and that was not a happy day, I can tell you, and I was very gratified to have Corey McDonald along for that trip, and we really appreciate his understanding that laws against putting a quarter in a meter and as an act of kindness to I can't think of anyone who wouldn't be gratified if their meter had run out and someone put a quarter in so they wouldn't get a $12 ticket. If you'd like more information about what's going on with the City Hall sleepers protest, please call the Common Threads Coalition at 421-9250.
Pretty much because they asked for it, not because they were able to prove any allegations of any health or safety hazards at City Hall.
About the City Hall injunction?
On Wednesday admitted that the whole reason for the injunction was so the City Council could shut down the protest. They're tired of hearing Dan Hopkins saying people are being arrested at night for sleeping. People are having their blankets stolen by police at night. People who their most precious possession is a sleeping bag are having it yanked out of their hands at 4 a.m. by your public servants with your tax dollars, aiding and abetting and encouragement and indeed the direct orders of your city council members, your progressive, liberal, compassionate city council members who, a hate flyer appeared on a van out on West Cliff Drive. You know what was on that hate flyer? It was the city council ordinance, the one that currently exists, the one that criminalizes homeless people every night. That's what Robert's in jail for. Robert is in jail because he passionately believes it should not be illegal to feed someone. It should not be illegal to sleep. It should not be legal to take away someone's blanket.
That's right.
It should be not legal to stop a person from being able to speak.
That's right.
We have to draw the line somewhere. And each of us has to find whatever way we can contribute to stopping this tide of insanity, stopping this unbelievable expense in the unbelievable wrong direction. We have to stop it. And I heartily recommend that we start down at City Hall, that all of you go down to City Hall at any time of the day or night. Bring your 14-inch, no larger, handheld sign. Bring your petition, bring your pencil, bring your paper, bring your video camera, bring your tape recorder, bring your sleeping bag, bring your alarm clock, bring your cup of coffee, a thermos full. Come down and let the world know that human rights mean something to us here in Santa Cruz, and even though it was coming from City Council, we don't care. We know a human right when we see it being stamped on, and we're not going to let it happen here. I'd like to introduce Dan Hopkins. Dan is a man who I am proud to say I slept with.
Yeah, I'm sure we can get it to you. There you go.
That was quite an introduction. But anyway, my name is Dan Hopkins, and I've been at the protest for 112 days now. Sean over there Well, me and Sean and one other person who never did show up to the protest, ironically, we all talked with each other around a campfire in a campground, and like we talked till about 2 o'clock in the morning with a bunch of other homeless people, and we were the only three that was willing to actually do something. And we wanted to protest a sleeping bin because it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz. It's illegal to have a blanket around yourself, and so, you know, and so on. But anyway, we've been protesting the sleeping ban. I think I better move this out of the way. I hope you can still hear me. And excuse me, we had our blanket statement in 35 degree weather. We've received 260 camping tickets at $162 a piece, and we've had like about 150 people that's come through that protest. I had a little problem. I sometimes go blank because I have sleep deprivation for about 112 days right now, so bear with me. When they take our blankets, they also laugh as they're taking them, and one time a person asked, "Why are you taking my blankets?" And the police officer was laughing, and he said, "Because I can." You know, they have a law that allows them to take those sleeping bags. And if you get caught twice sleeping in 48 hours, they handcuff you and put you in jail, and it's punishable by 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. We've gone through an awful lot, you know. Cops used to, when we first got there, they were coming as many as three times a night. We were getting like an hour and 45 minutes sleep in between the cop visits. And they were jumping over fences at the city hall to arrest us, catch us sleeping, you know, sneak up from behind us while, you know, behind walls and everything else, you know. And it was like a drug bust or something. And they were coming six at a time. They'd taken our signs, they'd taken our food, they'd taken our literature, and they've taken our blankets without giving us receipts. They've done all kinds of things, and we just, you know, we don't know what to think of it. We think it's inhuman, you know, and like one of the things that I always remember when I was a child was my grandfather. He was like I'm going to switch a little bit here. He's one of the kindest persons I ever knew in my whole life, you know, and up until this date. And what he used to do, he was a farmer, and I lived with him for 3 years as a child. And what he used to do was, he would stand out on his back porch, and there was a railroad track that went in front of his house there on the farm. And he used to sit there and just stare down the railroad track, looking both ways, you know. And what he did was, is he would wait for what they called hobos in those days. Now they call them homeless people, but in those days they were called hobos, you know. And actually people kind of liked them because they knew a lot of little things that other people didn't know, you know. And so my grandfather used to look out there and he'd see one of the hobos coming down the track, and he would say, "Hey, come here," you know. And we'd bring him in, give him a glass of wine, and cook a big spaghetti meal for him, you know, with big old meatballs and things like that, you know. And he'd be smiling all the time that he was, you know, serving this person. And when I think back on that, you know, if my grandfather was alive today and he was to see what these politicians were doing and what these policemen are doing, you know, remembering that he was one of the kindest persons I ever knew in my life, I know that he would go and get his shotgun, and he would go down to city council, and he would do something, you know. I know that, you know. And the reason I'm bringing up this little thing about this thing is that there was a supporter.
I guess we're lucky Dan Hopkins' grandfather's a goner.
This woman had chronic fatigue syndrome. And from what I understand, she could only get up for about a half an hour a day and actually do something. And she took her life two Fridays ago. And because she couldn't get medicine for herself, knew it was going to be too costly to get the medicine that she needed and everything. And I guess she was in a lot of pain and things. And she took her own life. But what she used to do was, she would come to the protest at 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, with the only half an hour that she had during the day. And she would come down there, and she would bring us coffee and tea when it was like, you know, really, really cold in the morning, nearly freezing. And she would come down and bring us coffee and tea and donuts. And, you know, these are the people that I feel really mean something. You know, they really are doing something for people. They're doing things for humanity. You know, she was an activist for, I guess, 20 years. And anyway, for those of you that know her, her name was Morgan Firestar. She had a radio program on pirate radio on 96.3. By the way, if you want to listen to a good radio station, tune into 96.3 anytime, 24 hours a day. The police, you know, and the politicians, the problem that we're having in getting the word out to the community is that the newspapers won't tell the entire truth, you know, to the public. And so the police lie, the politicians lie, and we're still sitting there trying to get human rights for people just to sleep, just to be able to cover themselves up. And it's pretty sad, you know, when things get this bad. Yesterday I was in the courtroom, and it was just supposed to be, you know, pretty much just finding out about this injunction that they have against us at City Hall. They're trying to stop us completely. And the judge said, well, he says, I don't think I want to give them their blankets back. They have about 80 of our blankets and sleeping bags. And he says, I don't think I want to give them back to you. We're going to let the police keep them. And then he said that he wouldn't stop them from taking our blankets in the future either. So they're still continuing this, you know, really bad behavior, inhuman behavior. And anyway, when I was in the court, I noticed that I looked off to my right, and the bailiff was sitting over there, and I noticed he kept staring at me. And a man named Patrick Rim was sitting right next to me. And I kept looking over at this bailiff. He was down on the end of the road there, and he just kept staring and staring. He had this awful stare, like he was ready to strike, you know. And I thought, well, after looking at it about three or four times at him, I thought, I'm just going to look straight forward. I'm going to ignore him. I'm not going to let him know that he's bothering me, you know. And fortunately or unfortunately, the person right next to me did react to it. And he looked at the bailiff, and he told him, he says, why are you staring at me? Right in the middle of the courtroom proceedings. Why are you staring at me? And the bailiff came up and says, it's time to get up. Let's step outside. And of course Patrick yelled, you know, what did I do wrong? I haven't done anything wrong. And the bailiff said, step outside. And then
this was Wednesday, June 19th at Judge Stevens' courtroom.
The bailiff said, the judge yelled out, I want you out of my courtroom, I want you out of my courtroom. So he started out, and he started to leave, and he got out the door, and then this bailiff chased him. You know, he ran after him, when all he was going to have to do was just walk out and go to, you know, go back to the protest or whatever. But the bailiff chased after him, and then he kept trying to grab Patrick as he was leaving, and finally he managed to grab him and grab his arm, and then he called five other cops, and all the cops came and jumped him. They put him in handcuffs. They sprayed him in the face with these pepper gas. And then while he was standing there just like this, they wouldn't let us out of the courtroom, but I ran to a window and I looked out, and he was right in front of the window. He was handcuffed, and he was, of course, cussing him out, you know, for what they had done. And I seen a police officer run right up behind him when he was yelling at him, and they grabbed the back of his hair, and he just kept going, just kept jerking it. And Patrick kept saying, let go of my hair, you punk, you know. And he just kept pulling it like this for no reason whatsoever. Here's Pat just standing there, you know. And then one officer yelled out, let's take him down, you know, and here he is just standing there. And so they all took him down. They all had different holds on him, and I seen one of the officers with his fist right in back of his kidneys, ready to punch his kidneys, you know, and imagine he would have probably almost killed him if he would have actually, you know, lifted up his hand and punched him. And so this is what we're going through, and I just hope that everybody here, you know, might support us in some way, and we will support you, you know, and we hope that everybody here supports everyone else's causes that are in this room, you know. There's, you know, it's funny, a lot of times, people drive by the protest over there and yell obscenities out their windows and stuff, and one of the things that they do yell out quite often that we're all familiar with is, get a job, you know. And the interesting thing I find out about that is the people at the protest have a 24-hour-a-day job. You know, we don't work 8 hours.
Those are civil rights workers down there, and they work harder than anybody.
People at the protest, just like myself, to go 36 hours without sleep, go and sleep 5 hours, and then turn around and stay up another 24, another 36 hours continuously for the whole 112 days, you know. And so, to me, you know, that's just ridiculous. that anybody would tell us to go get a job. And one of the things that I have written down, you probably can even see it out here, I notice I have this thing all blocked off and I got 3 stars there and everything. One of the most important things right now for me is to make sure that before I leave this room tonight, that I go and sign that 3 strikes
yeah.
petition right there. That's the most important thing for me to do. I want to make sure that I do not walk out that door until I turn around, make a U-turn, if I forget, and sign that 3 strike. I think that's one of the most unfair laws there is. And I know this guy right now that's working really closely with us in the protest, and he's risking everything. If he probably breaks any law, he's going to prison for the rest of his life, you know. And he's got a good heart, and he's worked harder, probably harder than most in the protest. And I'm really worried about him, you know, because I always worry all along, if he breaks the law, man, he's going to prison for the rest of his life, you know. And here's a guy that's doing something for, you know, humanitarianism, you know, and stuff, and that really bothers me. So I want to make sure that we sign that paper. And Jim Costner over here has been really, really powerful in helping us out. He helps us with literature. He's helping the word get out to the whole entire community about the homeless situation. And it needs to be commended, you know. And he's got a telephone number on the bottom of most of his papers, you know. It's 421-9250. I urge you to call that number and ask how you can help in some way or another. And he's got the Revolutionary Coalition, and together with a lot of other people, we started this Common Threads Coalition, which our purpose basically is for all of us to join together, no matter what our causes are, and help each other. Because we all basically have the same issue, you know, is the government is overtaking our lives, the laws are so unfair, people are being persecuted for sleeping, taken to jail, you know, and right now the city's probably spent at least a minimum, before we even go to trial or anything, they probably spent at least $500,000 to enforce the stupid law. And one of our lawyers told us that if they were to take the money they have spent already, they could house every single person in Santa Cruz that was a homeless person.
That's right.
Right.
That's
right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
And one lawyer in court, now listen to this. This is how the people think, you know, how they're all hooked up, the network together, you know, the judges, the police, and the politicians, and all this. But one of the other things that was said in the courtroom yesterday was our lawyer had mentioned about all this tremendous amount of money that's being spent on this. And he said to the judge, more or less, you know, making a statement, he said, let's quit using this money for this. Let's take this money and let's use it for getting shelter for the homeless. When he got finished talking, the judge says, now you can get down off of your soapbox, you know. That was his comment to it, you know.
Right.
And so I'm in hopes that we all help each other, and thanks a lot for listening.
Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from jail here at 96.3 FM. And this is the voice of Jim Costner at the Revolutionary Coalition Forum, which met last night at Loudoun Nelson.
I'm going to talk about this country called America because, to tell you the truth, I can't stand it, to be honest with you. I really can't. I'm going to have to tell the truth because I'm tired of people half-stepping things, and I'm tired of people sugarcoating things, and I'm tired of people only telling half-truths about what's really going on in this country. You know? Because there's some really intense reality going on in this world, and it takes a lot of strength and courage to deal with it. But we have to deal with it. We must deal with it. I'm going to spend about 10 minutes talking about America, and then I'm going to spend 10 minutes talking about part of the solution. I don't claim to have all the solutions, but I do claim to understand that people throughout this world together, collectively, we have the solution to the problem in this world. We do. Together we do. Now, Back in May 13th, 1985, I want to say one thing before I get on. I'm a really passionate speaker because I care. I'm not here to soapbox. I'm not here because somehow I get some ego gratification out of speaking. I don't. I really don't. In fact, to tell you the truth, I'd rather be at the beach right now, you know? But there are people that are dying and being killed and being butchered in the world as we speak. And if we don't do this, then all those people continue to experience the pain and suffering they experience. So when I'm speaking, please don't feel preached at, because I'm not trying to preach. I'm just expressing what I feel, what I understand, and what I know. Real simple. May 13th, 1985. The police surrounded the Osage House in Philadelphia where the MOVE people, who, raise your hand if you know the MOVE, and don't be scared that you don't know who MOVE is. MOVE was an incredibly powerful group and still is today that has raised their voice about what goes down in this country. They surrounded their house on May 13, 1985, and the Lieutenant Sergeant said, "Attention MOVE, this is America." And then that day, they put 10,000 bullets into their house. Delbert Africa walks out of the house, they saddle you, beat him all over the place, they kick his head. That's the cops. That's the police department. That's the mayor. That's the DA, right? Then, if that wasn't enough, they dropped a bomb on their house and off 11 people that day and let 61 houses burn up, a whole neighborhood.
And that was Jim Costner speaking last night at Loud Nelson Center. With a Revolutionary Coalition Forum. And thank you, Jim, for putting that on. We had a pretty good turnout. For those of you who would like to write Robert Norris Kahn in jail, please send your cards and letters to, and your hate mail to Robert Norris Kahn, prisoner number 147-2209, CJ8-FPOD-41B, that's his bed number, 41B, and that's at 425 7th Street, San Francisco, 94109. You could also call his telephone number at 423-HUFF. And if you would like to be one of the people that it's all right for him to call you from jail, he can make collect phone calls. And if you'll just leave your name and your phone number and that you give permission to do so, then do so.